Welcome to the podcast series, Dr. Modrick. Today, we will be discussing your research and case study on the practice of female genital mutilation in Egypt. As a little background, and Dr. Modrick, feel free to add more information, the case study that you conducted took place in 2014 and focused on the role that doctors play in this procedure. FGM is illegal in Egypt, but the question is, who is allowing this practice to happen and who are the stakeholders? Dr. Modrick surveyed 410 Egyptian women living in and around the capital city of Cairo, and she asked questions regarding mothers' attitudes towards this practice and their experience with doctors. Today, I would like to take the opportunity to interview Dr. Modrick and ask her a few questions. So let's get started. I guess my first question would be, what inspired you to conduct this study on FGM in Egypt?
Thank you so much for having me on this podcast, Daria. Before I answer that question, I want to just take a moment with terms. These terms are really loaded. So there's FGM, female genital mutilation, FGC, female genital cutting. You will hear me use the term female circumcision, and it's only because that's a direct translation from the word in Egyptian Arabic. So just wanted us to try to, we're talking about the same practice, but there are these terms out there. And I wanted to just be mindful that in the paper, we use the term circumcision to use the same term that's used by local women. But to answer your question, you asked me what got me inspired to do this study. I had done a previous study examining the relationship between female circumcision and maternal education. And we had looked at the relationship in past cohorts of women and increases in education in their community to see if they were more or less likely to have FGM, FGC done to their daughters. And we found that there was a very strong relationship with maternal increases in maternal education and decreases in the likelihood of doing this procedure to your daughter. But when we started to look at younger moms, moms who had not yet done this procedure to their daughters, and they were being asked in these surveys, these large nationally representative surveys, do you plan to circumcise your daughter? And the answer was like, we don't know. And if you looked later and later ages of moms, so younger moms having new daughters, you were seeing this I don't know question just increase. Meanwhile, we were seeing this increase in medicalization. And so we were curious to see if there was a relationship between the two of these. And so I partnered with a colleague, Maya Sieberdig, and the Population Council in Cairo, and we started to do some surveys. And before we started our survey with the 400 women you discussed, we did some pre-testing to see what if our survey question resonated. And what we heard again and again was, I don't know if I'm going to have my daughter cut or not. I'm going to go to the doctor and ask. And we were floored. We were like, wait, you're going to go ask the advice of the doctor. You're not going to go tell the doctor what to do. You're going to go ask the advice of the doctor. And so that's when we really wanted to dig in and conduct a more thorough survey to find out what was going on.
That's awesome. Really interesting to hear like how it sort of changed to not the mothers deciding anymore, but the doctors having sort of the responsibility as to whether or not that's going to happen. And this is sort of just building off of what you were just saying, but can you walk us through a little bit how you approached this study and how you discussed this with mothers and if there's like a stigma behind just talking about it publicly or, you know, sort of how you went around that and discussing that practice in the first place?
Sure. So first of all, our surveyors were all Egyptian women. We made sure that they were dressed culturally appropriately and when they went to approach mothers, they didn't say we're going to talk about FGM, but they said we were going to be talking about many issues having to do with reproductive health about yourself and your daughter. So that's a fair representation of the survey. But I also want to say that many women, especially young mothers who are at home, were willing to speak to us about gender issues. And that in the Middle East in general, while some conversations are taboo in mixed company, women amongst themselves have very detailed conversations about very sensitive topics. So I don't think we actually asked a question that was taboo at all. It might be taboo in mixed company, but not in gender segregated company. Does that answer your question about stigma? I don't actually think there was a lot of stigma.
Yeah. I think a lot of the times there's sort of a preconceived notion that this isn't something that people can talk about, but like in reality, like people can discuss this and, you know, especially talking about gender issues, I think it's been more common, just like bringing more awareness to it in general. So that's great to hear. And this is something that I discussed on my previous episode, was the concept of cultural relativism. You touched upon it just a little bit, but there was one historian who had written that what may appear as mutilation in Western eyes is simply the price of tribal and family belonging to women. So just based on your opinion and like experience overall, how do you balance the importance of recognizing cultural practices and protecting universal human rights?
This is such an important and hard question to answer. So I'm going to start with what I think are the power structures. So if we think about a young girl, she has very little power in society. She has parents who make decisions for her on her behalf. But then you think about the young mothers, that person is also embedded in a society and has a limited amount of power as well. And she only wants what's best for her children, and she's navigating conflicting messages, the older generation of women and her husband maybe, and maybe her, the cultural values that she was raised in are telling her, oh, you have to do this so that your daughter is successful. And then modern media is maybe saying, no, this is bad. This could harm your daughter. Your daughter could hemorrhage and die. And so these conflicting messages, are really hard. And I think that's why women started going to seek out information from doctors and seeking out an authoritative person to help them decide on this very complicated decision. Because it, in terms of power structure, while the little girl has no power, the mother only has a little bit of power as well. She doesn't have full agency to decide. And she is really balancing this cultural practice that will enable her daughter to thrive in the way that she understood she could thrive versus this messaging of like, no, you're actually hurting your daughter and you shouldn't do this. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I do think you have to hold and empathize with all the players here, especially the moms who are in a very hard place.
Yeah, I agree. I think when I was first reading about it and just hearing about like the mother's responsibility, I think there's also like an immediate reaction of how can you do this to your daughter? Like, how can you put your daughter in this position? And I think it takes a long time to realize, not even a long time, just recognizing like the cultural pressures and everything that's surrounded and like the different stakeholders that you may not understand in your life. So I think it's like really important to raise awareness about that as well. And, you know, going back to that, like there is this focus on like what the responsibility the mother has to protect their daughter. And with the rise of medicalization and that, you know, to the listeners, like the process of sort of having doctors do this procedure rather than the community itself. What do you think the broader community of human rights organizations should think about regarding the responsibility of the medical professional, whether that be the doctor or the healthcare person? And again, this is a difficult question. And while there may not be a specific answer to this question, what should be the considerations that the medical field should keep in mind?
Absolutely. So I think going back to this idea of power structures, I do think doctors have a lot more power. They're in a very different place than an individual mother. So they're respected in society. They have the power to change minds, and they have more training, and they are educated in a way that the promise they make is to do no harm to their patient. And so I do think there's a larger responsibility for doctors. Now, I also want to be mindful, they are raised in the same culture and they have the same cultural upbringing. And so they're not immune to that cultural upbringing. But if I were to try to have each individual mom be the agent of change, or doctors and the training of doctors to be the focal point to change this practice, I think I would focus on doctors. And I would start by having doctors in all over the world study female anatomy that's not actually studied very well. There's a ton of books on male anatomy. There's less done on female anatomy, knowing what the variation is and to really teach the idea that the variation is normal.
Yeah.
And so it's retraining the doctors. And so then when they are out in the community, they can really have the nuanced conversation of, yes, we used to do this. Yes, we used to think that this was helpful. Here's why you may or may not want to do it. And I'm not going to do it, partly because it's illegal, but partly because I agree that you shouldn't do it. And so really having them be the agent of change seems like a great starting point because they have the power to be agents of change. I also think the West needs to think about a few other ideas. So I read in the literature a lot points of view from other cultures saying, look, in America, you can do a consenting 18-year-old adult can modify their genitalia through piercing and unhooding of the clitoris and all kinds of cosmetic surgery. So why are we condemning FGM? You could just see it as a cosmetic surgery. And so my first point is, well, one is done on a consenting adult and not on a child, but that there is this is where the international community needs to at least acknowledge that there is this other perspective and that if one culture is allowed to have adults modify their genitalia without, you know, the chance of going to jail, then it's really hard to say in another culture, if an adult consents to do that, they can go to jail. I don't know if I'm making sense with that, but I think that's where the international community needs to, at the very least, acknowledge that from another point of view, there is a hypocrisy across these two cultures. And so it's best to be really consistent and say, well, here's how we get around the hypocrisy. We talk about consenting adults.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it all comes with perspective and understanding different cultural differences and all that stuff. So yeah, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'm really excited to share this with the rest of the Stanford community. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And a shout out to Stanford who funded this research in the first place. Thank you.
Of course.